I'm Chance, I'm an alcoholic. Sobriety date, November 13, 2013. My home group is the late night young people group, next door group. Meets every night at the Alpha Club. Pretty cool group. If you haven't been there, check it out. Have a sponsor others. Outside of that, like GG, I do not know shit. Which is funny because for the first 2 years of my sobriety, as that progressed, I gained the idea that I knew shit. And now, the longer I am sober, I realize the more and more I don't know shit. But yeah, welcome to the newcomers, the visitors, and thank you for story, GG. So I had a very warped perception of what an alcoholic was prior to sobriety. I thought an alcoholic was someone who drank every day, who woke up, got drunk, went to school, went to work drunk, and I'm sure I had other labels as well, but those were the main ones. And I said they did not apply to me, and so I was not an alcoholic. And when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I found the true definition of what an alcoholic was, the characteristics, one, the physical phenomenon of craving, two, the mental obsession, and three, a spiritual malady, right? And so, like, when I started drinking, like, the one similarity from, like, when I first started drinking to, like, when I ended my drinking was the thought of I wanted more. And at the time, if you asked me why I wanted more, I would have told you it's because I want to get fucked up, or I probably wouldn't have told you this, but in my head, I've been like, I'm a shy person. I do not know how to interact with you. I'm going through pain. I want to celebrate, and I don't know how to do any of that stuff without alcohol. So I quickly found out once I, started drinking, like, I lost those fears. I lost those insecurities, and, I found a version of myself that, I thought I wanted to be, and I chased that version, through the bottle. All my whole drunk log, like, the one consistent thing is I want more. And I'm not going to get into, like, the whole drunk log thing, but, I will say, like, I had a lot of negative outcomes as a result of the way I drank, and I had this tendency of, developing my own solutions to my own problems, right? And, like, I get a DUI, I just won't drink and drive. Fall into the New York subway tracks, just won't drink in New York. Fall and, knock out a tooth on my bike, I'll just leave my bike here. The idea that to stop drinking was never, it never popped up as an option to me. Because for me, like, I could not imagine a life without alcohol. I was a young person and I like to have fun. I could not imagine, having fun without alcohol. Fast forward to November 12th, 2013. My birthday is on the 16th of November, and I had, like, this whole 3-day, Facebook official bar hopping, plan set in stone. And the day before any of that happened, I got a phone call from a friend who wasn't going to be able to make my Facebook official shenanigans thing. He's like, hey, you want to meet me and some guys up at this taco place on Howard? I can't think of the name of it. The Green Lemon. It used to be called something else during the time. But anyway, they had cheap tacos and cheap Coronas that night. Taco Tuesday, whatever. And so I go out there, meet them up. I had two Coronas. Couldn't tell you how many tacos I had. But they're like, okay, well, this has been fun, Chance. You know, have a great night. Hope you enjoy your birthday. We have to go to work tomorrow. Love ya, adios. And I was like, okay, I want more. And so I hit up another friend, and we go out to this other bar, and it's an all-you-can-drink thing, and, you know, I drink like I drink, and, you know, the bar closes. I walk home because I'm no longer driving drunk, and I no longer have a bike to ride drunk. I had this tendency of when I would walk home drunk, I was just told this is what a klepto is. I guess I'm a klepto. I did not know this until like 2 months ago. But I like to try to see if car doors were open and, you know, get whatever I thought I wanted out of the car. And so I proceeded down this road, you know, checked. It was 13 car door handles. They were all locked. I get to the end of the road and I was like, oh, well. Meanwhile, this unmarked police vehicle pulls up. Three undercover cops jump out, and they tackle me to the ground, and they are arresting me for 11 second-degree felonies of attempted robbery of an occupied vehicle. And you know, I mentioned I had some DUIs in the past, some trespassing as well for not leaving the bar when I wasn't finished drinking. I didn't mention that, but that happened. But you know, this by far in my mind was the most severe consequence of my drinking. And I remember that night I was in jail, and I didn't have the balls to, you know, make that phone call to my mom. And so I slept the night, spent the night there, and the next morning I wake up November 13, 2013, and I'm trying to build the confidence to make that call to, you know, get posted bond, and I'm replaying the tape, right? I'm how did this happen? And I'm replaying the tapes of all my problems that has happened in my life at this point. You know, the arrests, the injuries, the damaged relationships, and all this. And for the first time, the idea that stopping drinking would avoid these consequences, because my solutions are not working, that finally became clear to me. And for the first time, I realized that if I continue to drink the way I was drinking, if I continue to drink, I would, you know, end up in prison or dead. And I remember I made a call to my brother, who's been in and out of the rooms for years. Spoiler, he's never worked any step. I found that out a year sober, and you know, it kind of explained why he didn't stay in the rooms or stay sober. But I call him, and he's like, Chance, you know you're an alcoholic, right? And I'm like, yes. like, Chance, you know you gotta stop drinking, right? I'm like, yes. Chance, you know you gotta stop drinking now. And I pause. In my head, I have this Facebook official birthday party shenanigan thing that people are committed to attending and everything, you know, come tomorrow, or I guess it starts that night. And like, I try explaining this rationality to him that like, I have this thing, like birthday thing, like, but afterwards, like for sure. And he's like, Chance, you aren't fucking serious. And he's like, he lives in New York. I'm gonna book a flight. I'm going to fly down to Tampa and take you to your first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. I'm like, okay. And, you know, I get posted bond. So I got arrested for 9 counts. I go out to eat with my mom. I have the pleasure of living at my mom's house during this time. And we get back to the house, and like, I'm brushing my teeth, and before I even time to like change, like, the cops are back at the door. They apparently talked to 3 more people who want to press charges, and they came to arrest me for 3 more counts of, you know, those charges, which total the 11 that I mentioned before. And so I go back to jail, and you know, they take another mugshot. I'm wearing the same shirt and everything, just a different expression on my face. And I remember like just feeling like so shitty about it. And you know, today I look back on it as like that kept me sober that night. That added to the desperation that I had when I finally, the next day, walked into Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I get out of jail again, and who's the timekeeper, by the way? Okay. So I get out of jail again, and I get home, or the next day, my brother arrives, and you know, I pick him up from the airport, and before we even go home, you know, we go to the 5:45 meeting at Club Yana, the happy hour meeting, the meeting I used to lie about going to when I would ride my bike there, lock my bike up there, and walk up to the actual happy hour at McDenton's. But this time, I actually walked through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was instantly greeted by someone, you know, welcoming to Alcoholics Anonymous with a handshake. And If you make it a point to like be the first person to shake someone's hand in AA, thank you. Because you know, it was actions like those that made me feel welcome in the beginning. Because I'm a shy person, I'm an introvert. I don't know how to socially interact without alcohol. At least at the time, I did not. And it was, you know, people extending their hand out to me, welcoming me, talking to me, that, you know, made me feel welcomed. But that first meeting, the only thing I remember from that first meeting was, you know, this old timer. I'm assuming he was old timer. He was old. He said, "You never have to drink again." And he went on to say, like, things to do to never drink again, but all I took away from that meeting was you never have to drink again. And my mom and brother thought it was a good idea. I got a sponsor with like 5 years sober to like talk to the judge when I went to court, because like they have 5 years sober and like the judge would listen to them, and like, we don't do that. My brother happened to know someone in Tampa who had 5 years sober. And on day 2, or I guess it would be day 3, we met up with this guy. His name was Mike W. He passed some years ago. But I remember explaining the situation that I was in, kind of like went over some things that happened in my life that got me there. And he told me at the end of the conversation, like, you throw yourself into Alcoholics Anonymous, you do everything you need to do to benefit your sobriety, things will get better, I promise. And if you're sitting in this room and like you're feeling like shit, you know, throw yourself into Alcoholics Anonymous. Do everything to benefit your sobriety, and things will get better. I promise. So I remember I would call my sponsor every day, and at the end of the conversation, he said, "Things will get better. I promise." And you know, the first 30 days, like I felt like shit. Like the whole thing that brought me in here, like I went to school, you know, got a degree, and like just one of those felonies like would make that degree pretty much useless. And so like I was like in my head constantly about fear of my present, fear of my future, beating myself about how I got here, and just all the thoughts that, you know, your head will tell yourself. And I remember I would go to meetings and I'd get out of my head and I'll feel better. Then I'll get home, go to sleep, and wake up back in my head. And this process was repeated over and over and over and over again. And I want to read something. I took a screenshot. I don't know the page, but it's from the Big Book. If you are as seriously alcoholic as we were, we believe there's no middle-of-the-road solution. We were in a position where life was becoming impossible. And if we had passed into the region from which there is no return through human aid, we had but two alternatives. One was to go on to the bitter end, blotting out the consciousness of our intolerable situation as best we could, and the other to accept spiritual help. This we did because we honestly wanted to, and were willing to make the effort. You know, some people relate that to like you know, pre-sobriety. I relate that to like that beginning of sobriety, because in my head I was doing everything I needed to do. Like I wasn't hanging out with old friends. I wasn't going to the bar. I wasn't drinking. I got a sponsor. I was going to meetings every day, multiple meetings every day, and still I was like in my head, and like it was like I'm doing everything I can to feel better, but I'm not feeling better. And the truth of the matter was, the one thing I was not doing was I had not started the steps yet. And I remember hearing in the rooms, like, people share about, like, the feelings I was going through. They share about experiences that I'd went through, that I was going through, and they would laugh about it. And, you know, after meeting, they'll be happy. Like, before the meeting, they'll be happy. And they said, like, how they achieved that, like, through the steps, through finding, like, a spiritual connection with the higher power. And I guess before I go into this, like, prior to coming in, like, I didn't get sober to get a relationship with a higher power. Let me make that very clear. I like to say I was agnostic, borderline atheist. Before my brother took me to that first meeting, he pointed out the steps everywhere where it said God, and he made it clear to me that it was a higher power of your own understanding. And so day 23, like I'm at that jumping off point where like it's like I will give this thing a shot. If it does not work, at least I can say I tried. But deep down inside, I really wanted it to work. Deep down inside, I was tired of feeling that way on a daily basis. Deep down inside, I wanted to be restored to sanity, right? And so I met up with my sponsor the next day, and you know, we knocked out the first three steps. And like, step one, like, in in the doctor's opinion, like, I found out those characteristics of an alcoholic that I mentioned before, like that powerlessness. Like, I remember when I was at the bar, you know, my friends would ask me, like, why are you drinking so much, Chance? Why are you double fisting? How come you're like three more than me? And my answer was, like, the more I drink, the thirstier I get. And when I read that phenomenon of craving, like a light bulb in my head like went off, like that's the feeling I was trying to describe, right? And, you know, I mentioned I didn't drink every day, but like I was like, come Sunday when I was done drinking, like I was thinking about like what I'm going to do next week to avoid what happened, you know, the night before. Come Monday, I'm thinking about, okay, I should probably go, you know, stock up. You know, come Tuesday, who am I going to hang out with next weekend? When it comes to picking classes, it's like, how am I going to pick I can't take this 8 a.m. class on a Friday because my Thursday is my all-you-can-drink night. You know, I won't make it to that, you know. Come, you know, internships, like summer's the time to party. I don't have time for internships. You know, my whole life revolved around alcohol, right? And like to me, like that was the mental obsession. Like thinking about drinks when I'm not drinking, and you know, the spiritual malady, like I chased like this feeling through alcohol to like get past fear, to get. Grant me confidence, and like it took me a while in sobriety to realize that like I was relying on alcohol like some people rely on God. And in my head, like when I drank, like I would gain confidence, like the fear would be removed to a point where, like, I was certain if I took a drink, like, these things would happen, right? You know, I had this this faith in alcohol. And so once I, like, know what an alcoholic is, like, it was very easy for me to relate my experience to how powerless I truly am over alcohol and how my life was unmanageable. And, you know, step two, like I mentioned, like, I truly believe, like, I was, you know, willing to accept, like, some kind of higher power, or I just wanted to be restored to sanity, right? And, I turned my will over that day, you know, with the idea, like, I've done everything else except this. 3 days later, I get a call from my lawyer saying, hey, Chance, you know those 11 felonies? It's like, yeah. It's like, so I got good news. I got him reduced down to one misdemeanor of loitering. And I am so thankful today that I did not attribute that to a coincidence or anything like that. I attribute that to throwing myself in Alcoholics Anonymous, doing everything I need to do to benefit my sobriety. I attribute that to turning my will over to a power greater than myself. And I remember calling my sponsor and, you know, telling him the good news, and he's like, I told you so. And like from that day, I've not looked back. And like that was the experience I feel like I needed to like develop this relationship that I have with my higher power today. I like to say that was the foundation of, you know, my connection with my higher power today. So that happened, and you know, like we talk about, you know, a psychic change, and you know, it's referred to in our literature. And like today, like I look at that moment as my psychic change. When I realized there might be something to, you know, when I realized alcohol wasn't the only solution, right? You know, there might be someone behind this God thing. There might be someone behind this spiritual thing. There might be someone behind these steps. And, you know, I continued through the steps, and you know, the fourth step, I actually looked forward to doing the fifth step, which is weird because the times after that first time, I did not look forward to doing it. But the first time I did, I looked forward to doing it because, like, I've kept so many things to myself. Like, I was kind of excited to get that off my chest. And like, the fourth step and fifth step, it's not about bashing ourselves about, you know, the harms we caused. It's about finding, like, our defects of character that, you know, have ruled us through our whole lives, and in hopes of being able to recognize them and, you know, address them when they come up in, you know, our present and in our future, in hopes that we don't fall victim to them, as, in my opinion, as I did in the past. And then, like, six and seven, like, I remember I thought of it in the sense of a house, or I don't want to say house clean, but in the sense of, like, I like using the metaphor, if you, like, clean a house completely, as it gets dirty, you can just pick up things as it goes, where, on the other hand, it's like a daunting task to, like, clean things up one by one when the whole thing's a mess. And so I remember looking at it in the sense of, you know, my higher power was removing all my defects of character at that time. And then, like, as they come up, they do come up a lot throughout my life. I turn to my higher power to remove them then. And as far as the amends process goes, you know, I was reminded 2 days ago, you know, the metaphor of, like, you know, our amends process is the greatest weight loss program, you know, there is. Imagine being able to walk anywhere and see someone who you've harmed, see someone who you are so resentful at, and, like, not be afraid, not, like, run away, not fall victim to, like, those usual thoughts that go on in my head. And, like, through the amends process, you know, I become free of those situations, and I make those things right, to where if I see that person, it's I'm at peace. You know, 10, actually, I want to talk about one amends. I remember I made a... So my dad wasn't present in my life growing up. He wasn't present a lot. Let's just say that. And I remember when he made my first fourth and fifth step, he did not make my amends because I guess we did not find a reason for me to make amends. And then later on, I remember hearing someone talk about a similar situation where, you know, they weren't wrong in the situation, yet they were allowing this person to hold, like, this power over them. And they were asked, like, do you love the life you live today? And they answered yes. And then they were asked, how could you blame this person so much for contributing to the life you love today? And I remember when I heard that, it kind of changed my perspective on that. And I remember talking over it with my sponsor at the time, and we got to the realization that despite my dad not being around, I never made any active, I was I never made any actions to reach out to him myself. And I remember I ended up, deciding to make amends with him. And, I made amends with him for not reaching out, myself. And in turn, he ended up making amends to me for not being around. And he told me the reason why he wasn't around. And, it didn't make it right, but it took away those questions, he wasn't around because he didn't love me. He wasn't around because of this or this or this or that. For some reason, that was like the hardest amends I made. Step 10, I have the opportunity on a daily basis to, make things right instead of like waiting till my next fourth and fifth step in a men's process. My prayer and meditation life has really evolved over time compared to what it was, at a month sober, compared to what it was at 6 months sober, 3 years sober. It continuously evolves, and I will say, like, my connection with, or my relationship with my higher power, for some weird reason, it gets strongest when shit hits the fan and like I'm in pain. I say that's a funny thing, but really that's when I turn to him the most, and so it shouldn't be that strange. Step 12 is like giving back, and I'm a believer, like the first 11 steps just prepare me to be more efficient at step 12. All those times, like when people helped me, like it's like my responsibility to give that back. Sobriety hasn't always been like amazing. Life happens. And it didn't make sobriety less amazing. I should say life hasn't always been amazing sober. My perspective on those quote-unquote negative experiences have changed to a point where, like, when things happen in my life, I have like this calmness that it's going to be okay, because in my experience, if I throw myself into Alcoholics Anonymous, do everything I need to do to benefit my sobriety and take action, things end up working out, whether if I see it the next day, a week later, or a year later. And like today, I'm grateful for like that, those 11 felonies. Today I'm grateful for, all the shit that's happened in my life. And it took like at least 4 years till I was like, I could honestly say that with like true resolution. And like today, like, I don't need alcohol to have fun. I don't need alcohol to get through my fear. I don't need alcohol to do anything. Like, I have a new solution for that. And I turn to my higher power. And as a person who came in this room not wanting anything to do with God, like, today I view staying sober simply a byproduct of this program. I've experienced way, in my opinion, too much more, positive outcomes from doing this shit. I believe I'm out of time. So if you are new, throw yourself into Alcoholics Anonymous. Do everything you need to do to benefit your sobriety. Things will get better. I promise.